From theunce.com, this is The Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to The Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. For 15 years, Martin Fulb was an unassuming software engineer living and working in Silicon Valley. But a fateful trip to Burning Man pushed this South African native to get out of the dot-com world, move to Costa Rica, learn Ableton inside and out, and reemerge as Marty Party, blending big chords, big bass, and lots of wobble to create his own genre of music, the Purple Opera. His latest EP, Skakuza, is out today on The Confluence.
Now, I understand you grew up in South Africa. What kind of music were you brought up on? Were you listening to the traditional sounds of Southern Africa? Were you listening to the pop music imported from Europe, the US, and West Africa?
I was born in South Africa in 1970, so I'm a little older than most of the people you probably interview in this situation. So I was born into the 1970s music, which my parents listened to, and obviously crossed over with the African sound, the African music of, you know, native Africans, which was all over the place in South Africa and still remains all over the place everywhere you go. So it was quite a strange, you know, just like the paradigm of South Africa, the musical influence that I've had crosses over popular music of the 70s, 80s, and 90s straight over with sort of African beats and African indigenous music.
Now, you grew up, I guess, still under the system of apartheid. Did that somehow affect the way in which music, both popular and underground, was disseminated?
Not really. You know, music is a nice thing in that it kind of traverses all the political rubbish. So I think that music in South Africa was one of the things that helped to eventually rectify the problem and end apartheid. And it really was exposing the problem to the rest of the world. You know, eventually things did change and the government had to look at itself and do a gut check and make a change. And I was actually there for the general election where I voted for Mandela, which was really just before I left. I was 23 years old, but I stood in line. If I remember at the time, I was the only white person in the line. It was quite ironic. The place that I actually voted was sort of a little bit out of the city. And I voted for Mandela. And about 6 weeks later, I actually accepted a job offer in San Francisco. And that's what brought me to the States.
And when you were in the States, you were there as a software programmer?
Yes, I studied computer science in Cape Town, South Africa. That was my college education. And I was looking for a job at the time. And obviously, it was exactly at the time of the dot-com movement in San Francisco and Silicon Valley. And, you know, I put in my resume and got a really good offer at a dot-com, which, you know, immigrated me over to San Francisco. And I was actually with the same company for almost 15 years.
And is that where you were introduced to electronic music?
Yes. Back in South Africa, in those days, the rave scene had just begun. And I was going to raves and listening to techno and trance and four-on-the-floor music. And was very much in that scene. And going to San Francisco really excited me because San Francisco at that point in time was a mecca for the underground warehouse parties. So, you know, I came to San Francisco and was really a huge upgrade in my musical and dancing scene. I remember going to some incredible underground warehouse parties in San Francisco and looking at and watching Sasha and Digweed and things when they were first coming up. So a really good education in electronic music coming into the rave scene in San Francisco at that time.
There's something wrong and there's something right. When you can take me by the hands and I will close my eyes. When you lay down with me, you took the other side. When you lay down with me, you never slept that night. Would you ever be my, would you be my fucking boyfriend? Would you ever be my, would you be my fucking boyfriend?
The Marty Party remix of Be My Fucking Boyfriend from The Birds and the Bees.
So were you interested in beat production because you had such a strong background in computers and programming? Or was it much more organic than that? You heard the sound that captured your imagination. You said, I got to figure out how to make that.
It's a cross-section of everything. I get asked this in most interviews, and really the answer is quite interesting. What made me really want to start writing music was how annoyed I was by the monotony in electronic music. That's really the reason. What I wanted to do was I wanted to bring a lot of the musical knowledge that I'd heard growing up you know, through all the decades of music that I've been privy to. And I wanted to introduce that to electronic music. So, you know, I'm a big fan of chords. I'm a big fan of chord progressions and melody. And that's really what I wanted to do, was bring that. You know, huge synths are great, but people weren't really doing anything other than a simple stab here and there over a 4-4 kick drum.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't chord progressions. There wasn't storytelling in the music. There was just that damn beat all the time.
Right.
So that's really what I did. And what I did was I moved to Costa Rica for 2 years from San Francisco. I checked out of the .com that I worked for many, many years. And I went to Costa Rica and I decided I wanted to take some software to go and learn, just to waste some time. And it was Ableton Live that I took because I was recommended it by a friend. And I've used it ever since. So an interesting story. I took Ableton Live to Costa Rica in the rain, in the rainy season. I sat and I learned it. I learned how to make music. I learned how to do sound design. And I wrote my first, you know, 20 songs in Costa Rica in a garage in the rain. And a lot of those songs are on The Source, the Panerade album, ironically. So that's really where that vibe came from. And Josh came down. We threw a party in Costa Rica called Manifesto. He came down the second year we threw it, and he came into the garage and was like, hey, what's that music you're doing? That's really cool. And that's where Panerade started, was that, you know, that whole experience, was him hearing the music and saying, yo, that's exactly what I want to do too. Let's collaborate and do this together.
You had little to no musical training. Do you think it was because you had been around computers and software that you were able to pick it up? Or was it painstaking where you had to have, you know, dog-eared pages in a manual, flipping through it back and forth between that and the screen, and you know, going online to find other tutorials or things like that?
I think it's a little known fact that a large proportion of the work and tedious business of making electronic music is pure software and software knowledge and computer knowledge and file maintenance and file editing and programming and rubbish like that. And absolutely, my mind, you know, I'm a computer guy, I'm a geek. I'm really well schooled at managing files. And, you know, at the end of the day, people can say what they want. They can call it tracks, music, albums, you know, whatever. We make files. We render files. And those files go around the internet. And that's what the music industry is. It's a file production and delivery business. And I'm really good at making files and managing files and projects and things like that.
You're making all the producers and DJs and labels seem like such squares now.
Yeah, they are. You know, behind, well, you, if you look behind the music of any popular musician, Lil Wayne, anybody, the people making the beats are just some, you know, skinny geek in a dark room somewhere. It's not that glamorous.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is the cross-section between over DJing and producing, which was another thing I had to learn, actually as a total side thing. You know, I wanted to make music. I'd never really realized it would become my career. Very, very quickly, I realized I couldn't make money selling music from the get-go. One had to develop a name and a brand. And to do that, you needed to have a show and you needed to DJ it. So I became a DJ too. I learned how to DJ. I learned it all pretty much within 6 months. And lo and behold, I realized I had a really good DJ talent. In parallel with my music production, I have an extremely original and high energy DJ style, which, you know, I haven't seen many people do what I do. I'm very proud of how much I've learned in the DJing department and the tooling that I've developed for, you know, delivering my sets. So there's music production, which is one thing, and then there's DJing. And, you know, I'm just very lucky. I don't know why. I never realized it, but I'm really good at both, which is a unique thing. You know, it's a very unique thing.
So let's talk about your sound, and I'm not going to win any points for originality on this one either. You've described it as purple opera, purple crunk, or just plain purple. Can you break that down for me?
Yeah, well, one of the things that, you know, happened in the last 3 or 4 years since I've been getting in this game was, where does this music fit? What genre does it go in? You know, the actual system of music has genres, and they only accept music in those genres in order to sell them and promote them and talk about them. And the music I've made from the beginning has never fitted any genre. And, you know, the movement of producers making this music kind of have coined the term purple as a word that describes an in-between music. As purple is an in-between color, it's an in-between genre. It doesn't have a genre. So we've created one. And, you know, I've kind of made my own kind of purple music. Like I said before, I'm very much in love with melody, and I'm very much in love with extremely fast crescendo progressions. I have ADD, so I like my music to change every 8 bars. Something new must be introduced, and it needs to fit in very cleanly in a musical way in the song. And so you get a very fast progression, which must last, I like to say, no more really than 2.5 minutes.
And along with those fast progressions and the throbbing bass, you also co-opt a lot of vocal hooks and samples from the 70s, 80s, 90s in your performances. Roxanne comes to mind, most notably from when I last saw you, as well as, of course, contemporary hip-hop and the like. Is there something unique or special about the way you go about selecting those drops that you use, or is it just stuff that you grew up on or love?
One of the first things I did when I realized that I could make my own music, you know, from the minute you start playing chords and you realize, you learn about chords and how chords sound on synthesizers, and, you know, you instantly want to go and recreate the famous songs and the songs you always love to hear. And one of the things I did very early on was start doing retro dubstep remixes, which really were my interpretation of a classic song using electronic music, using the sounds and the bass and the beats and the heavy beats of the, you know, the more contemporary music. So it's a genre that I do, one of many kinds of music I make, and that is to reinterpret or dub my favorite and obviously the fan favorite classic rock, classic electro and dance songs, you know, of the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s. And it's going really well. I've released to the public a whole lot of them. They obviously work very well in my set and are huge fan favorites always and requested all the time in my gigs. So the retro dubstep flavor of Marty Party is going to continue and is one of my favorites and obviously a fan favorite, but that's what it really is. I call it retro dubstep.
Marty Party EP Skakuza, out today on The Confluence.
So let's talk about your new album, Skakuza.
Yeah, I have a ton of releases coming out. One of the problems I had is I'm a very, very productive person. You know, I write a track a day when I'm in the studio, almost to mastered versions. I mean, I've got my formula down so well. So I had a lot of music in my anthology that just was never released, and it was so much, it's very hard to work out how to release it. So over the last year, you know, I've built a team of people and I've started to actually put a release cycle together. And I have my first release coming out on The Confluence, which is a new label out of Los Angeles. It's going to be an EP called Skakuza, followed by a couple of other EPs also with African names, which is just going to be a really good cross-section of the Marty Party sound. The EPs will have, you know, purple tracks, pretty tracks, very down-tempo tracks, very experimental tracks, you know, all in one EP, and there'll be a few of those coming out in a series. At the same time, I'm going to be releasing things through my own label, through my new website, MartyParty.com, which is being built right now, which is going to be an unbelievable experience for the fan, and I'm going to self-release purple music off that in albums, just to get it out there, so there'll be a series of full-length albums coming out off the Marty Party label, and I have a lot of other things going on with Panty Raid. So we've got the second Panty Raid album coming out. We're going to be finished off in January. That'll be coming out in early 2011, as well as a lot of one-offs on EPs and compilations that are going to be popping up here and there, and remixes that I'm now officially doing for people. So a lot of exciting things, as well as a lot of free music for the fans, all of the dubstep retro remixes I do, and now I'm doing retro purple tracks, which are also very fun and no one's really heard. I'll be giving those away for free off MartyParty.com in 2011. So it's going to be a big fan experience. I'm very excited. And once again, just like everything I do, will be cutting edge and bought before its time and just fantastic and fun. So I'm very excited for this year on the releasing front. And finally, the fans will be getting a lot of Marty Party music, and the Pandora station will fill up and things like that.
Absolutely. You sound amazingly prolific. You were talking about you have a sort of a formula when you go into the studio. How has your approach to beat production and music making in general evolved since, you know, your early work, Walkerville to the West Coast, for example?
Well, hugely. In the beginning, you start using different synthesizers and their presets. You know, you don't stray far from the preset. You find a preset you like and you just want to use it. You're so excited because you like the sound. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I used to be a preset producer. I would just, you know, get drum kits, you know, which are one-shot samples, make beats, use presets on the synths, you know, for the bass lines, use bass that was just preset bass, etc. And I did that for a long time, and it's a great recipe, and it makes fantastic music. But over the last few years, I've learned sound design. So I can now open up my favorite synthesizer in an initialization patch and actually make the sound that I want, which really fits the Purple mold and creates a unique experience, and you can really make sounds and tones that cut through the mix like no other, especially with bass and melody over bass. So, you know, now I go into the studio and I get inspiration from anything, from something I heard, a vocal sample that I like, a bass tone I like, or something like that. And, you know, I'm just off very fast. I have different ways of approaching it, but it's always pretty much takes around a day and it's done. And then obviously to release it, I spend maybe another day mastering it. But, you know, it produces music really fast. You know, within a week, I can make an EP very easily. Yeah, the Purple formula is the funnest for me because it's so new and fresh. And, you know, it's all about getting that, starting with a chord or a chord progression, just like classical composers would do. And then, you know, developing the chord and showing the scale to the listener and, you know, introducing melodies in the scale and then very fast developing that to be a crescendo where it completely exhausts the scale, with all the frequencies being involved, you know, and all the harmonics of the scale. And, you know, it's really exhilarating when you nail it because it happens so fast. It's like a game. It's like a video game. And, you know, when people sit in my studio with me and I write Purple music, you know, even looking in the environment at the track in Ableton, the colors of the boxes and the way the boxes line up looks like a video game, you know, and you can see where it's right and where it's wrong, and the way it starts and the way it ends needs to be a perfect triangle of escalation until the end is, you know, a very complex puzzle through the scale, the musical scale, which I find very fascinating and is something I'm obviously going to be pushing and focusing on over the next few years, is developing that, because let me tell you, people are loving Purple. It's crossing over the dubstep people with the traditional electronic music people and the older people who like traditional music and really respect chords and melodies that, you know, sit within chord progressions and beats that, you know, are open and let people hear the music. So it's really pulling everybody together, and it's also fresh and new, and I think people really love fresh and new things. So Purple is really where I'm going to go and put most of my energy, and my first album that I'm releasing is going to be a Purple album.
And your fans are lucky that you're that prolific, put out all that stuff. They have all these free tunes, your three EPs that are coming out.
Yeah, man, shows are going really well. We've sold out. Penny Raid has sold out on pretty much, I think, all of our shows we've done, except for one was nearly sold out on the tour, which is amazing because these are the first times we've ever played these cities, which is really unheard of. It's fantastic. I'm really thankful to, you know, the universe and the people involved and the friends and the business people that I work with. And I want to shout out to them. Thank you for everything, for letting this happen. And 2011, I'm going to do all the festivals as Mardi Party, a lot of them as Penny Raid, and I'm going to change the game for sure. I'm really excited, and I'll take you all with me.
I admire your confidence. Marty Fulb, thanks so much for being on the Unz podcast.
Everyone says the Unz is a great thing. You should get on it. So I'm glad to be on it, and hopefully we'll do it again.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's Unz podcast. Thanks go to Steve Gonzalez with The Confluence and, of course, my guest, Marty Fulb. The new Mardi Party EP, Skakuza, is out today. Check back in with the Unz later this week to hear bonus material from the interview and more unreleased Mardi Party tracks. If you love theunz.com and the Unz podcast, show it. Nominate us for an International Dance Music Award by going to wintermusicconference.com and clicking on the IDMA link. Fill out the top section and then vote for the Unz and the Unz podcast in sections 26 and 27. Thanks for your support. Next week on the Unz podcast, Torin Goodnight, aka Bird of Prey, will be featured on the program. This Bay Area producer blends psytrance and dubstep to produce a sound entirely his own. Bird of Prey's EP Dreamcatcher is out now. Remember to visit theunz.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the Unz podcast, contact me at anand@theunz.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theunz.com. Catch you next week.